flows through many places, the air is not affected by the qualities of these places. Although the air sometimes carries the odor of a filthy place, the air has nothing to do with such a place. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, being all good and all auspicious, is never affected by the material qualities like an ordinary living entity. Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunte Prakriti Jan Gunan, Bhagavad Gita 13:21. When the living entity is in the material nature, he is affected by its qualities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is not affected. Disrespectfully, one who does not know this considers the Supreme Personality of Godhead an ordinary living being of a Jananti Mamudha. Parambhavma Janata, such a conclusion is reached by the unintelligent because they are unaware of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutare Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Kinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschati Deshatarine Uchavacheshu Bhuteshu Charan Vayur Iveshwadaha Nochavachatvam Bhajate Nirgunatva Diyogunai. Like the air passing through different types of atmosphere, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing sometimes as a human being and sometimes as a lower animal, is always transcendental. Because he is above the material modes of nature, he is unaffected by higher and lower qualities. This verse is telling us something about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which of course is what the Bhagavatam is meant for, teaches about God. And it's coming in the context of the Matsya, discussion of Matsya avatar, or avatars in general. Briksha Maharaj begins the chapter by asking, why would God appear in such a despicable form as a fish? So this is basically answering that question here. That don't think that God has anything to do with fish, as we understand fish in this world. Smelly, obnoxious things that they are, low form. Don't think that because, don't think like he's a fish like the fish of this material world that you know. He's in a different category. He has nothing to do with this material energy. When you hear fish, you think of fish in this material energy, but don't think that way because he's above the material energy. So there's no question of him being contaminated by contact with fish. Think of it, you have to think of it in a different way. God is transcendental to it. So the example given here is that air travels in different places, through different places, and some of those places may be, have an obnoxious odor, for example. But the air itself, the constitution of the air, what air is, its swarup, you might say, doesn't change. What it goes through is kind of external to what the actual identity of the air. So similarly, God, he doesn't change. Even when he appears to be in contact with this material energy. Now, of course, he never is, and that's the point here. Ishvara. Iva Ishvara. He's the Ishvara. He's the supreme controller. So when he comes, when he's in contact with this material world, or appears to be, he's in a different position than we are, because we're not Ishvara. We are controlled by the material energy. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha. The material, the prakriti. We're also prakriti there. Krishna has two prakritis. The para and the apara prakriti. Aparayamitastanyam prakritim vidime param. In the beginning, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that I have these eight material energies. Aparayamitastanyam prakritim vidime param. So there's a para and the apara. So we are para prakriti. We're in the higher category of prakriti. Prakriti means Krishna's energy. Krishna is the Purusha. He's the controller. Of course, he has unlimited energies, so they can be categorized in different ways. So this is one way to categorize higher and lower categories of his energy. So the inert material energy and the conscious living entity. So in discussing this, Prabhupada raises the point. So how is it that the conscious living entity, which is superior, is under the control of the inferior prakriti? How is the higher prakriti being controlled by the lower prakriti? So then he answers very logically, because that lower prakriti is being controlled by Krishna. That's why. It's a tool, it's an instrument in Krishna's hand, just like you can be bound up by ropes. So those are inferior to you as a conscious entity, conscious person. But if those ropes are in someone else's hand with superior force to you, then you can be controlled by those ropes. So the material energy, of course, is called gunai, which is mentioned in this verse, which is kind of ropes. So how are we tied up with these ropes that are inferior to us? Because Krishna's tying the knots. He's the one controlling it. But no one can control him. Avajananti mamudha. Parambhavma jananto. People don't understand this. When they think of Krishna, just like when people see a picture of Krishna, no, this can't be. He has just a form like ours. He's just like us. So that's immediately what they think. Parambhavma jananto. They don't understand that he's of a superior nature. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna gives a little hint. Of course, Arjuna is acting like someone who's in illusion, in ignorance. So he has to ask Krishna different questions to clarify things. He's really asking for our benefit. So Krishna, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, of course, he's giving different instructions about yoga, Krishna consciousness in general, this philosophy, Bhagavat Tattva. And in the beginning of the fourth chapter, he tells Arjuna that I spoke this to Vivaswan. So what does Arjuna say? He says, what? You're my contemporary. How could you have spoken this to Vivaswan? So then Krishna says, we've both lived many, many births before this. We've both been here together many times. But you've forgotten and I remember. So here we're seeing a distinction being made. Of course, Arjuna has already recognized the distinction earlier in the Bhagavad Gita. We accepted Krishna as his guru. But I'm an illusion. I accept you. What you just tell me what to do because I'm an illusion. I respect you as having superior intelligence. And gradually, more and more, we get more and more examples of Krishna's divinity or Krishna's godhood being revealed throughout the Bhagavad Gita. So this is one place where it comes out very. It really gets focused on. In this fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna is God. So this is how it kind of starts in this conversation. How is it that you spoke to Vivaswan? So Krishna says, well, we've both been around a long time, but you forget. And why is that? Ajopi san avyayatma, bhutanam ishvaropi san, prakritim swamadishtaya sambhavami atma mayaya. This is my energy. This material world is my energy. And when I come into it, into this world, for the sake of the living entities, I come on my own power. Sambhavami. I incarnate. Atma mayaya. By my own power. We, of course, are not, we don't have that power. This is a distinction that's being made here. Because he's the Ishvara, he's the controller. This material energy cannot control him. It can't force him. So you have to get rid of that conception of Avajananti Mamudha. Mudha means foolish person. Ignorant person. So an ignorant person doesn't see this distinction. Of course, at the extreme level, we think we're all God. There's no distinction between Krishna. Even though he's unique. He has unique qualities, transcendental qualities. So then, of course, Krishna, he tells Arjuna, in the context of this, discussing this, he says, we've come, both of us have come many times. I come on my own power. And then he says why he comes. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati parata. abhutanam adharmasya tadatmanam shijamyaham tam paritranaya sadunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sangstarapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So these two verses, they give different reasons why Krishna is coming. This, of course, has what we're talking about now. We're talking about avatars, avatar tattva, this section of the... Because we're talking about a specific avatar, Matsya avatar. So in the context of that, we're discussing the whole idea of avatar. Avatar means one who descends. So why does Krishna descend? When there's dharmasya glani, when the dharma... Krishna has just said that I've taught this through the parampara, I've taught the science of yoga, which you can also say is dharma, how to live your life, which means your life is supposed to be meant to connect you to God, so that's yoga. So I've taught this, and human society is supposed to live according to this, what I've taught previously. But people forget, dharmasya glani, it becomes, there are discrepancies in dharma. People don't perform it properly. This happens, it's the nature of time that this happens. Things tend to disintegrate. Of course, this is one of the laws, physical laws of nature discovered by the scientists, that things tend to get less complex over time. They tend to go to a state of homogeneity. Everything is kind of becomes one. You build with energy, you put energy and you build a skyscraper, so it has structure and form, and it's not simple anymore. But over time, it disintegrates, and after a while, all you have is sand, basically, soil. So it becomes one thing. So it becomes more simple. It loses its complexity. So similarly, over time, this happens, the nature of time. So similarly, this happens, Krishna says, that this material energy, when I give my dharma, the material energy has the effect of doing this also to my instructions in the form of dharma. It tends to degenerate over time, and I have to come and give it a boost, booster shot. Remember when I was a kid, we used to get a polio vaccine, and then every once in a while you get a booster, kind of re-infect your body with whatever they do. So Krishna comes and gives booster shots by teaching again the same thing, refresher course to human society. For those who don't get it, you have to go to remedial training sometime. Right? You have to, remedial education. What is remedial? It means to remedy. So Krishna comes to remedy the illness in society that people have, their dharmasya glani, their discrepancies in the performance of dharma. So that you get a decrease in dharma and an increase of adharma. Because there always has to be action. If you're not doing dharma, then in your action, which is Krishna's just spoken about in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says you can't stand still and do nothing. So either you're going to be doing good things or you're going to be doing bad things. You're going to be doing karma or vikarma. Unless you're acting, of course, in Krishna consciousness, then it becomes akarma, transcendental activity. So he comes to give dharma an uplift. And paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. To protect the devotees. Paritranaya. This word, tranaya, I spoke about this previously actually, a couple of weeks ago. Tranaya really means to deliver. Tranaya. And paritranaya, pari means it becomes around, pari means around. So it's more encompassing, all encompassing deliverance. Krishna will deliver us fully. We don't have to worry. And he will protect us from all sides. We can also see it as protection. So it's a fort with all the way around, circular fort, impenetrable. That's the kind of protection that Krishna will give to his fully surrendered souls. To the fully surrendered souls, his devotees. Paritranaya sadhunam, the sadhus. We see this in his lila. We see how both these things, and vinashaya tadushkritam, how he annihilates the miscreants. don't know if anyone uses this word anymore. Miscreant? Does anybody use that word? We have our own language. So the bad guys, when Krishna comes to get the bad guys and to protect the good guys, guys in the white hats. So that's we see this in his leelas, how this takes place. In fact, in Krishna's, when he comes to earth, he does so much of the killing the bad guys that people get shocked by it. What kind of God is this? There's so much killing going on. People hear this. And we have, of course, the most graphic example in Nordan Sringadev. Someone comes in the temple and sees the blood and guts. And this is your God? So he says he does this in Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we shouldn't be shocked because he kills everybody anyway. That's who else is killing us? God is the one with the power. He's killing everybody. He's creating everyone. He's the source of everyone. And he's not really killing anyway. He's destroying bodies, these illusory bodies which are like a dream. You can say he's waking us up from one dream to another. These dream bodies that we have, just like at night our dream bodies die when we wake up. So that we can say it's kind of that kind of death when Krishna's killing us, because they're just dreams anyway. They're not really who we are. This is one of the points, of course, Krishna's getting across to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. You're not really killing anybody. They're going to go on. And because they're great heroes, they're going to enjoy heavenly pleasure after this. They're going to get a reward from this. And besides, you're not doing it anyway, Arjuna. I'm the one who's doing it. I control all of this. You don't think I can do it? Let me show you what I can do. My universal form. So Arjuna said, oh, okay, I get it. After seeing that for a few seconds, like, whoa, I don't need to see anymore. Now I can see armies being swallowed up. Chomping, Krishna's chomping away at them, swallowing them, and his form is universal, and his universal form. So this is his power. And especially this Vishwarupa is a display of Krishna's power, because we're impressed by power. So Krishna has to show some. Oh, you don't think I'm God? You have some doubts? Well, let me show you this. Don't think I can do what I want to do? You don't think I can come to this world on my own power? Well, let me show you some of the power I have. So, Krishna shows his power. He displays it, of course, in his leelas in different ways. In his Krishna leela, beginning from he wasn't even out of the crib yet. He was already killing big demons. So he displays this power for our benefit. So we actually have to learn about Krishna's power in the because we tend to think that he's like us. We have to get rid of this misconception. So in the Rasa Leela, I think it's at the end of the Rasa Leela, Parikshit Maharaj asked Shukadeva Goswami, why would Krishna do this? In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I come to establish Dharma. So what is he doing, messing around with other people's wives or these young, unmarried girls? He's supposed to be establishing Dharma, and now we see that he's transgressing Dharma. So Shukadeva Goswami says, Dharma vyatikramo drishta ishwaranam chasahasam tejiyasam madoshaya vani sarvabhujoyata. He says he does this to show his power. What he's showing is that when you're as powerful as I am, you can do anything you want, because those transgressions of Dharma don't touch me. They don't affect me. They have nothing to do with me, really. And they're only apparent transgressions of Dharma, because Krishna's interacting with love, with his devotees. So they're exchanges of love is what they are. But they may appear to be transgressions of Dharma, but they don't affect him. It's just like if you put something into a fire. Vane sarva bhujoyata. Just as fire burns things up, so anything that comes close to Krishna, anything bad, you can say, comes into Krishna, it's destroyed, it's purified. So you don't have to worry about Krishna being contaminated. So what is he doing here? He's showing, I'm so powerful, I can do this. You can't do it. And then the next verse says, Naitat samachadis jatu manasapi yanishvara. Don't imitate this. Don't think you can imitate this, because Krishna is powerful. Naitat samachadis jatu manasapi yanishvara. Those who are anishvaras, here in the previous verse it says those who are very powerful, and of course especially Krishna, they can do this kind of things. But one who is anishvara, not a controller, not a powerful person, can't imitate it, even in the mind. Don't even think about it, in other words. Don't even think about it. I'm telling you, Krishna is doing this. Don't even think that you can do this, because you're not Ishvara. He's the Ishvara. Vinashat yacharan moja yata rudrobdijam visha. He says, if you try to imitate, or don't even think about it, any more than you would think, that I can drink an ocean of poison like Lord Shiva did. If you can drink an ocean of poison like Shiva, then you can think about imitating these powerful controllers. But obviously you can't. You'll be destroyed. By trying to act in this way, you will be destroyed. So we can't imitate Krishna. We try to imitate Krishna, which of course is what we try to do in the material world. We try to imitate Krishna, and what happens? We lose. We always lose. We're always defeated. Parabhava sthavara bodha jato. Rishabhadev tells us this material energy is where you're always being defeated. We're always... I heard recently there's a term in psychology. It's called the empathy... Is it gap? No, it's another word. Is that, you know this term? Empathy... I think it's gap. It means that we never are satisfied. We think if I get this thing, then I'm going to be satisfied. But we don't, we're not satisfied when it happens. It's called the empathy, I think it's called the empathy gap. So this is what happens to us. We're always defeated. We think, oh, I just need to do this, and then everything will be okay. I'll be happy. But it doesn't happen. There's a saying among people with boats, they say, the happiest time when you have a boat is the day you buy it and the day you sell it. So because you're thinking, oh, I'm going to get so much happiness, you buy it, you're all excited, then after a while, let me get rid of this thing. This thing is just a headache. So that's material life in a nutshell. Our attempts for satisfaction, they don't satisfy us ultimately. Because we don't have the power to make things happen. Krishna has the power. Whatever he wants, sambhavami atma mayaya, he has the power to fulfill his own desires. We're dependent. We don't have the power, and therefore we're always frustrated. So that in itself is an indication that we're not on the same level as Krishna is, or his different avatars. Well, the verse again, uccha vacheshu bhuteshu charan vayur iveshwaraha nocha vachatvam bhajate nirgunatva dhiyo gunai. Like the air passing through different types of atmosphere, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing sometimes as a human being and sometimes as a lower animal, is always transcendental because he is above the material modes of nature. He is unaffected by higher and lower forms. Any questions, comments, corrections? Contradictions? Yes, Pran Govindapur.
You gave one side for the maybe challenger to Ras Lila. But Prabhupada also quote the other verse, Kopi Dharmaya Kalpate Jadhista Shinas Neha Bhavadinam Madhapana. Because it's related to following verse, Sarvan Kaman Dadamite Mam Prasanna Jata Bhuyo Arhati Sochitam. Because everybody has three types of lamentation. All lamentation will be nourished when they come and see my pastimes that I did with this with you all. He's addressing to the gopis. That their inner nourishment is desperately needed. And they, when they see this, my lila, they will be completely drowned into it and they will. So this is a great help you all are doing to participate in my lila. He was addressing to the Gopis. So that's the positive side for the Paritranaya Sadhana.
Yeah, of course, there are different reasons, of course, where Krishna does things. One reason Krishna performs his pastimes, this comes up in the prayers of Queen Kunti, is basically that he performs pastimes so we'll have something to talk about, Krishna Katha. And the Rasalila, even though it's apparently about sex, it destroys the sex desire. So this comes up in the discussion between with Uddhava. Uddhava says like this earlier, that this is another reason why Krishna did this, because if you hear this, then it purifies the heart.
Vikriditam, that's the verse. Vikriditam brajavodavidam cha vishnu svadhaya nitonasunyata. Kama rida roga asopanyata. The disease of the heart is the lust, will be soon destroyed.
Yes.
I was thinking in the parbot, I just heard you because I love 13 chapter 2. The Prabhupada gave a very nice verse. Now you gave a very nice explanation on this. Paraprakriti, why should be or sin under Aparaprakriti because of Krishna's control. But in that verse, I think if I recall the commentary given by also different acharyas, also Prabhupada gave that there is a five from 20 to, this is 21st, right? The verse you just read. I think 20 to 24, these five are the relationship between Purusha and Prakriti. Because the original question that Lord Arjuna asked on 13 chapter, 6th question, Prakriti Purusha Chaiva Khyatra Khyatra Gyam Evacha. Atod Beditam Ichchami Gyanam Gaya Evacha Chokesava. So this 6th question he is answering this, that the partial Sarva Khyatragya is Jiva and the complete Khyatragya is Krishna, Paramatma. So this verse. So in that reference, I would say that very clearly Prabhupada gives so nice that I think you read Purusha Prakriti, what is that? Purusha Prakriti Sto?
Yeah, he quoted that in the purport.
Yeah, Purusha Prakriti Sto. That verse, previous sloka, it says that why Jiva is suffering and Krishna comes, he does not have any effect. So in that explanation given that the Atajuni, Prabhupada always quote this verse also. I heard Prabhupada speak that verse many times. That jivas are doing contact with this world for two reasons, association and attachment. Therefore they suffer. But Krishna has namam karma nilipanti, he does not have any association or attachment, therefore he is not. So any devotee comes to know this and he lives with Krishna, then he can be also free from this. Otherwise he will transmigrate.
Hare Krishna. So you said that Krishna never gets contaminated with material energy. But Dharma gets contaminated and says that Krishna's paraphernalia, his pastimes are not different from Krishna. So how is it that...
I was thinking of that when I made the statement. I was saying, well, if it's Krishna's words, how can that become disintegrated? Basically is what you're asking. It should be transcendental because it's connected with Krishna. Well, the material energy is also connected with Krishna. And part of the, we have our philosophy of chintya beta beta tattva. So Krishna's energies can act in different ways. So sometimes they act, it's spiritual energy, even this material world is Krishna's spiritual energy, but it's acting in a different way. So everything connected to Krishna can act in certain ways according to his desire. So it just happens that it's the nature of the material world that it can affect Krishna's katha. Now we could also say in one sense that the science itself is not actually lost. It's still there. Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam. It's still there within the hearts of the devotees. But in ordinary society and the way society follows it, basically they're turning their backs away from the teaching. So maybe it's not exactly correct to say that the potency of Krishna's words as he spoke them has become less, but the people's attention to it has become less. Because whatever Krishna speaks, that's eternal truth, so it has to stay. It doesn't lose its potency. the katha itself, the words of Krishna themselves, just like Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada used to say, Bhagavad Gita is just as powerful now as it was when it was spoken, but people don't follow it. That's another thing. Material energy infects them and they don't follow it. Madan Mohan, please.
I was thinking the mechanism is quite similar to the same mechanism as an offense. How something that's pure becomes not perceivable, even amongst the personalities that may be engaging externally in the exact same thing. One day it's one way, there's offense.
Right, the holy name is always pure and transcendental, but because of our aparad, it loses potency, so we can apply that same principle to Dharma.
That's awesome. And I had a question about, it says, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities doesn't take birth again. Is that real simple, like you just explained it today, so we got it, that's it? Or is it, there's some kind of like hidden mystery to that that's more than what you just said?
Prabhupada, sometimes he states these things in different ways. For example, I think I was talking about this recently, where it says in that verse, kibra nyasi, kibra vipra, kibra nyasi, shudra kene na, ye krishna tattva veta, se guru hai. So who's qualified to be a guru? Now we would say one who's qualified to be a guru would also be qualified to go back to Godhead, a real guru. So who is that person? One who is krishna veti, one who knows krishna tattva. Ye krishna tattva veti, se guru hai. So Prabhupada used this in conjunction with the where Krishna says, janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvataha. Again, basically the same idea. One who knows me in truth. So one who knows Krishna tattva, then that person doesn't take birth again in this material world. Now Prabhupada, in some ways, he made it very simple. He says, one who knows that Krishna is God. He doesn't think Krishna is just some ordinary historical personality or that he's an incarnation of the Brahma Jyoti or something, mode of goodness or whatever. But he knows Krishna Tattva. He understands that Krishna is Parabrahma. He's the supreme absolute truth, cause of all causes, Ishvara Parama Krishna. One who knows these things, that's knowing Krishna Tattva. Now we could say that, is that enough? Well, Prabhupada seems to say that it is, but we also know that there's a certain level of, how do we really know it? That's another thing. The last time I gave class, I was talking about the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, about purification through Krishna Katha, through hearing. So when the modes of passion and ignorance are no longer have an effect on you, and you come to the mode of goodness, then you get Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. Then you really know Krishna Tattva or Bhagavat Tattva. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. Mukta Sangasya Jayate. You get that actually when you're liberated. So that verse implies that you don't really understand this, you don't really know it until you reach the stage of liberation. Of course, our process of liberation is engagement in devotional service. In one sense, we say, well, we're already liberated. As long as you're carrying out the order of the spiritual master, you're liberated. So there's sort of liberation in quotation marks and real liberation. One time someone wrote to Prabhupada and asked, if I'm liberated, because Prabhupada would say a devotee is automatically liberated. So the devotee said, why don't I feel like I'm liberated? So Prabhupada said, it's just like when you're in a boat, then you're safe, you're on the boat on the sea, but because of the waves, you're still feeling the waves, but you're protected, you're still safe. So we're still feeling the waves, but as long as we're in line with the spiritual master, we're liberated. And that from that platform, then we really can understand Krishna. In other words, when we're following the orders of the spiritual master, then we can get realized knowledge of Krishna. So it's 9:45. We'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.